Hi there, and welcome to the 6th Annual Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. I'm so happy you're here with us today. I'm your host, Devin Kuntzman, toddler parenting coach and the founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. I'm on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and empower parents and caregivers to overcome the challenges of toddlerhood, nurture their little one's development, and create confidence in their parenting skills. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. And I am so excited to be here with Spencer Russell, founder of Toddlers Can Read. Welcome, Spencer.
Thanks for having me, Devin.
Thank you so much for being here. And before we dive into this exciting topic of teaching toddlers to read, could you just tell us a little bit more about yourself and your work? Because I have a feeling there's some people watching who may not have met you before.
Yeah, of course. And I definitely appreciate the invitation and the chance to talk to folks at home. So my name is Spencer. Before starting Toddlers Can Read, I was a teacher, and I still consider myself to be an early childhood teacher. So I taught kindergarten and first grade for 6 years. During that time, I won a number of different teaching awards. It ended up being over $30,000 actually in teaching awards, and was recognized on a lot of different stages as being a good teacher, effective for kids. And it's really the thing in life that I love the most before my son. So I thought I was gonna be a teacher forever. I was like, I found the thing that I'm gonna do. I really like doing it, I'm really good at doing it, and I'm living really close to my kids and to their families. But when my partner found out she was pregnant, I knew I wasn't gonna be the kind of dad I wanted to be and the kind of teacher I wanted to be, and something had to give. And so I left the classroom in 2018 to be able to take a job from home where I could spend more time with my son. And so from there, I ended up working for an educational nonprofit company. And we did curriculum-specific professional development for teachers. So essentially, I left teaching and became a teacher coach. And then from there, I got promoted and I was coaching the people who were coaching the teachers. And it was something, again, that despite the fact that it was like a relatively like comfortable job, it ultimately wasn't my passion. I knew that my passion was still with children. And during that time, as I was working that job, COVID had hit, the pandemic had hit. I was home. I wasn't on social media at all until 18 months ago. So no one knew what I was doing at home. No one knew I was teaching my son how to read. No one knew I was working on this. No one knew I was kind of translating what I had found success as a teacher with my son. And ultimately, I decided that that was what I wanted to do full time. So in November of last year, it's been just about a year since I quit my job. I quit my job working with teachers and working with teacher coaches to help parents and caregivers teach their kids how to read. So that's where folks know me from today, with Toddlers Can Read. What I do is I help parents and caregivers, regardless of the child's age. So going as young as 18 months or so, getting just the beginning of saying letter sounds back to the parents, up to 9 years old, 10 years old, kids who are already in school who are struggling to read. I help parents feel empowered to teach them how to read at home in a way that's fun, in a way that's engaging, in a way that doesn't feel like it's pulling, and in a way that allows kids to be the best version of themselves.
Oh, that's so exciting. I can't wait to dive into all of this. I'm so curious to learn more. And to start us off, what do you feel is maybe the biggest misconception or myth about teaching toddlers to read?
Yeah, I think there's many misconceptions. I think there's three main ones. And this is something where when you invited me to speak, I was like, let's just make sure that you feel comfortable with me, because I'm not going to have the same point of view. Can have the same perspective as even all of this, but let alone all of social media, because everyone has a different opinion on parenting. Everyone has different beliefs on what kids are capable of. And for me personally, I feel like there is a big misconception that literally toddlers can't read, that this is something that they can't do, that if they're reading, they must have memorized it, or they must be faking, or they must be looking at the pictures. And while that's certainly true with a lot of people, especially the lot of videos that you see, certainly can read. And the work that I did with my son, he was reading his first words at 25 months. And by three, he was like reading really well. And I don't share that publicly, only within the context of this specific question. So people know it is possible. And as time has gone on in the last 18 months of my page existing, we're seeing more and more people sending videos, people sharing to their stories. Here's my kid. I can't believe they're reading. And I think we're starting to see the first myth breakdown, which is literally that kids can't do it. And I think past that point, we get to the people who say, okay, maybe toddlers can read, but it's developmentally inappropriate. It's not an appropriate practice to be able to learn how to read. And I see a lot of like miscited research a lot of research on like the brain and the eyes and things. And my team and I have dug into the articles deeply. And there's no evidence, there's no tangible scientific evidence to say that little kids' brains can't read. A lot of it actually says the opposite. It says that this is a time of a lot of learning, of a lot of growth, of the brains being primed at 2 years old to be able to pick up on things. And so people say it's developmentally inappropriate to teach a child how to read. But if you think about the beginning of reading, like let's say that I have this sound here and it's the sound for a child to be able to look at this and remember this sound is no harder, is no more inappropriate than for them to look at a color and remember that it's red, to look at a circle and remember that it's a circle, to look at a couch and say that that's couch. We're doing the same thing. It's called the brain being symbol-minded, and the brain begins to be symbol-minded in early toddlerhood. So people say it's ultimately inappropriate. That really depends how you're teaching it, but if you're doing it in a way that's respectful of your child, it certainly is appropriate. And I think the third myth here is that maybe they can do it, maybe it's not inappropriate, but like there's no reason to do it. Like there's no reason at all. You're just forcing them. You want them to go to Harvard. You want to like compete against other families and that sort of thing. And my perspective is like, if anyone tells me they're teaching their kid to read because they want to send their kid to Harvard, I say no. And I have had this conversation with folks where I will not let them buy my course because I do not believe in their motives. I don't think they're doing it for the right reason. I don't think they're going to work with their kid in a way that's respectful. So my goal is for parents to have a deep reason why reading early, why being confident, why feeling successful is going to help their child in life, whether it's through social skills, their confidence in school, their ability to take tests without worrying, their ability to learn new information about the world. I think there's a ton of reasons why someone might choose to teach their toddler how to read, but ultimately I'm not trying to force anyone. So if someone says, you know what, I don't have a good reason to teach my kid how to read, I say, don't do it. But it is a misconception for sure that people like myself and parents who trust me, who are taking my course, are like forcing our for no good reason. All of us have our own unique, specific reasons why this is important to us.
Yeah, I love that because, you know, every child is unique, every parent is unique, every family unit is unique. And it's so important to honor that uniqueness. And it might look like what is something that works or is right for one family might not work or be right for another family. And so exactly. I love that we can like really look at and honor, you know, each family and each child inside of not just should I teach my child to read or not, at what age, all of these things, but just in the larger context of parenting and beyond.
Yeah, completely agree.
So could you dive a little bit more into some of the reasons or benefits behind teaching a toddler to read and why parents may want to embark on this journey?
Yep, of course. And I think there's one piece of context that's helpful is like my username is Toddlers Can Read, but the demographic of families that I support ranges beyond toddlers. So we have families starting, honestly, at this point, prenatal, which I was surprised by, people who have yet to have kids, who literally feel comfort knowing that whenever they choose, they're going to know what to do. Two parents of toddlers who either, the biggest two things I've found is they're trying to help get their kid ahead so that when they get to school, they're going to feel academically ready, or they've noticed that their kid is already interested in books, they're interested in letters, they're interested in sounds, and they're trying to build on that passion. So that's another big reason. I also have homeschool families who are looking for a solid curriculum to follow and something that they can understand and implement with their child. And I also have the biggest growing body of parents who follow my advice, who take my course as elementary school age students. And there was a big reading gap before COVID. That reading gap is bigger after COVID. And we have issues in education, not just with how it's being taught, but with how parents feel comfortable or uncomfortable actually speaking to the teachers, bringing concerns in, understanding what's happening in the classroom. So I try to bridge that gap for students already in kinder, first, second, third, with feeling confident and successful in school. So I think part of the reason why depends a lot on age and depends on the family situation. It's different if you're homeschool than in second grade, than in kindergarten. But all of that said, I think the audience here is primarily parents of younger children. And some of the biggest reasons why people choose to do this is, number one, it's quality time with your child. People with multiple kids, people with a lot going on, are carving out 3 to 5 to 7 minutes a day working one-on-one with their child. And I found that that is one of the biggest benefits people have said, is it's just amazing to have this one-on-one intentional time learning and doing something with my kid. We also have parents who are teaching their child to read, really want them to be able to explore new books, explore new topics, to learn about the world without it coming from the parent. So my son, he's 4 and a half now. He loves space and he loves trains. These are like his two big, and he gets to go to Barnes and Noble. He gets to pick out which he wants, which space books he wants, and he can read them without us. He can just read them. And that is amazing. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to have a child learn on their own. And then you obviously have all of the parts of school, of academics, of doors opening when a child knows how to read. And I myself personally really struggled with reading in first grade, and it was a bad time. It was a bad time. I have very sad memories of what it felt like to see other children do something that I couldn't do, see other kids playing while I had to do extra practice. And that's something that I personally did not want my son to ever feel. And many of the families who work with me don't want their children to feel that either. So that's not a message trying to scare people. That's not like a negative message. It's just an honest message. People are gonna say, what was my experience as a kid? And what do I want to be true for my child? And if there's 100 people who, of course, there's 100 different reasons why they've signed up. And as long as it is not to post it on social media and brag, as long as it's not to compete or it's not to put your kid in Harvard, I'm for all of it.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking, as someone who loved reading growing up, it just really struck a chord with me when you said that your son just, you know, can read these books and explore his topics and interests. And as someone who, you know, in elementary school and middle school just love to read, and I just think about like what a gift reading has been in my life. And so I don't know, that just really came to mind when you said that.
Yeah. And I encourage folks, when they sign up for my course, one of the first lessons is, what's your vision for your child? And this is something I studied with teachers. I help to coach teachers in their visions for their class. It's your ideal reality. Like, what's the ideal situation? And I think all of us have an image and have a vision for who we want our child to grow up and become. And it's not a profession, but it's often a feeling. It's to be happy. I want them to be confident. I want them to be successful. And ask every parent, what is your vision and how does reading tie into that? Whether your kid is behind and we're working to catch up, whether they're young and we're working to get ahead, whether they're homeschooled and we're giving them support, how does reading connect to that? And I think it's different for everybody, but one of the biggest things is they really can learn about the world. They can explore, they can pick up on information without us telling them. And again, their brains are ready for this. So I'm just here to support folks in doing that.
That's awesome. Are there maybe some reasons why parents and caregivers might just hold off on teaching their toddlers to read?
Yeah, I think it comes back to the vision. So if your vision, if you look at the vision and you say, okay, here's who I want my child to be, and here's the age they are, and I don't think they need to read right now to get there, I don't think it's going to be helpful, I would recommend that you don't do it. Because what's going to happen is, if you don't have a purpose behind it, you look at your kid and you say, you know what? The school that we're zoned to, our school district, they're going to be fine no matter what. Or if they can't read, we have the resources, the teaching experience to catch them up ourselves. Or I just, as an adult, don't really believe in stuff that feels more academic. And that's not personally something that jives with me. Don't do it. There is no reason to do something that you don't feel passionately about and you don't find a purpose in. And the other camp of people, I would say, is people who look at their child and they say, you know what, I don't think you can do this. Whether it's because they think the kid is too young, whether it's because they think the child has a learning disability, any other reason, behavioral challenges. If you look at your kid and you don't believe in them, I don't care the kid's age, I don't want you to teach them, because what you're going to communicate to your child is yes. And you might not say it out loud, but through your body language, your teaching, your instruction, your tone, your energy, you're going to pick up, my parent doesn't believe in me. And I think that's much, much, much more detrimental than just leaving it be. So if it's not important to you, or if you don't believe in them, I would encourage you, don't do it. If this is going to cause you a lot of stress and anxiety, if it's going to make you feel like you're behind as a parent or anxious or any of those negative emotions, don't do it. But if the idea that your kid is capable and that you are too, and that this can be literally a transformative experience in your relationship and child, I think that would be a group of people who I think it would be worth giving it a shot.
Yeah. And this is so great because what we're talking about here is actually giving yourself as a parent, as a caregiver, permission to be like, hey, I actually don't have to do this thing right now. Maybe my best friend's doing it, or my neighbor, my peer, this person on Instagram, and I don't have to do it right now if it's not a fit for our family. And I think that's such an empowering place to come from as well, that we can have an empowered yes and an empowered no. And I think that that's just a really powerful thing to remember as a parent and caregiver. And there might be some parents and caregivers listening that are like, okay, this sounds so interesting. I think I want to give this a try, but listen, I am not a teacher. I have no experience teaching. Am I going to be able to do this?
Yeah. So I think that my job, I think of it is like part reading coach and part life coach, where I'm helping parents understand, okay, here's exactly what to do with the reading. But there's also a big part of this that's empowering folks to understand that they don't need teaching experience. You don't need like a long list of credentials to be able to teach your child how to read. You just need to know the steps. And the best way to think about this is there's a long list of people who know a ton about how to teach reading, but they're not teaching their kids how to read, because there's a difference between what you know and what you do. So ultimately, if you want to teach your child how to read, there's two big components. There's two big things your child needs to learn. They need to know the sounds the letter makes. So again, this is, and we go through it and we get those 26 sounds. And we need to know how to blend the sounds together into words. So hopefully this shows up the right way. This might show up backward. If we have a word, the word hat, you've got two responsibilities as the parent. Teach them the individual sounds. Like I said, no harder than teaching them a color or a shape. And then teach them how to put sounds together. At makes hat. And there's a step-by-step process that we can do for how to teach sounds. There's a step-by-step process for how to teach blending. And that is all you need to know getting started. You don't need degrees, credentials. You don't even need to be a good reader. You just need to know the steps and how to teach it. So I'd say if anyone is feeling uncomfortable in their teaching experience, like I was too when I started, I was 22 years old with a class full of 5 and 6 year olds and no experience with 5 and 6 year olds. But when you take the attitude that you can learn and you can get better, you do learn, you do get better. And I want to encourage folks, if they feel interested, just to give it a shot.
That's so exciting. And so if you could dive a little bit deeper into the steps and let us know a little bit more about how to create the sounds, the blending of the sounds, and what other steps we might need to know about this process.
Of course. So if you think about the alphabet, you have 26 different main sounds. And if you look, this is a lot. That's a lot to teach. And even as adults, if we tried to learn 26 new things today, it probably wouldn't work well. So the first step here is we separate out the majority sounds and we say, you know what? Let's focus on three. Let's do this one. Let's do this one. Let's do this one. Let's just do a little bit at a time. And once folks narrow down to three, I say, let's start to play some games. So let's say, how many times can we get our kid to look at it and to say it? And that might mean that we tape them to the, and we say a sound and they run to the sound. They hit it and they, it might mean we put them on the floor and they jump on the sound when they say it. Kids who are even, it might just mean picking up, throwing sounds. Anything we can do to strengthen the connection and the number of repetitions between this thing here that looks like this says s, is going to be key to helping it stick in our kids' head. And so I recommend we start with sounds that our kids can pronounce. Don't try and pick sounds like that, you know, at 33, I'm still trying to learn how to say that sound, right? Some sounds are just tricky. Pick sounds that are easy to pronounce, sounds they like, and just pick a couple and start playing with them. We play it over and over and over again. And eventually, not only are they going to have fun, but those sounds are going to stick in their head, and we can push them to the side. We can pick two or three more. And from there, they know the sounds. We can start to do blending. And blending doesn't have to look like the whiteboard that I showed you where we're writing a bunch of sounds. It can be out loud. It's like, Devin, let's play. I'm going to say two sounds, and I want you to tell me the sounds. At. And you listen, at. And you're able to say at. Exactly. Yeah. You're building your blending skill. We can do that in the car. We can do that in the stroller. We can do that in the store. It's something we can do anywhere, anytime. And if you marry the two things, we know the sounds, we can blend, you start to see a kid reading their first words. And that, to me, I have a video I've posted before where he reads it, and then off camera, I'm crying because it's just like such a special moment. It is so amazing to see just how simple this is to actually get a kid reading for the first time.
Yeah, this is really cool. What I hear you saying is that we want to start small, like just breaking it down into small bite-sized chunks, and that we want to make it playful and fun because, I mean, toddlers and children learn best through play, through doing, through action. And so the fact that this doesn't have to be like pretending you're a teacher in a classroom for what we envision what that might look like, you know, back from when we were young or something, that it can be something that is activity based and just fun. And I think that also allows for us to follow a child's lead whenever we work at it through playfulness and fun. And then they can have like a visual component or just auditory. It doesn't have to necessarily always have a visual component to it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And one thing that I noticed is that you haven't said anything about like learning the alphabet per se. Like I hear you talking, like, for example, the letter S. I hear you saying like, but I haven't heard you say like, teach them this is the letter S. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So my approach is based on teaching kids how to read. There are other aspects of literacy more generally, which might be spelling or writing. And for those particular things, names of the letters is going to be really important, because you need to be able to actually put a name on the object. If I wanted to have a conversation with you about the letter S, we need to be able to say, this is an S, let's talk about it. It's kind of squiggly, it goes like that. But when we're reading, we don't read letter names, we read letter sounds. We read sit, sit. So since my focus is helping people teach their kids how to read, I focus on sounds. I know folks are focused on names. Some folks, the alphabet, I think people can do whatever they want to do. I'm just here to tell folks, if reading needs to know their sounds, period, point blank, the end. And typically, I give folks the advice, it depends on your child's situation when you choose to teach them the letter names. So if they're already in school learning the letter names, you might want to teach the letter names and sounds together because they're already learning it. Or if they're really young, they're not in school and they don't need the names at all yet, not for spelling, not for writing, let's just teach them those sounds. Let's get them reading as fast as possible. And let's start to get them reading books, learning, exploring on their own. There's plenty of times to add those letter names later.
Awesome. Thanks for clarifying that. And
yeah, of course.
So what do you think when it comes to, like, you've helped a lot of parents teach their little ones how to read. Are there any common traps that parents sometimes fall into that parents and caregivers can be on the lookout for, and maybe how to not fall into those traps or get out if they do?
Yeah, the most common one, and I feel a little bit hesitant to bring it up, but it is true. It's behavior. It is parents who look at teaching their toddler how to read, and they say, okay, the kid isn't focused or they're not enjoying it. How can I make it more fun? When in reality, it is how can we make it more effective, and how can we kind of change our body language, our tone, our directions, our expectations to help the behavior meet the task? And so why I say I am hesitant is because my page isn't like toddlers can focus or like toddlers can blank. It is toddlers can read. So I'm very aware that I am reading accounts. But if you think about school and if you think about a classroom, you can have two teachers who teach the exact same lesson, and you can have one classroom where the kids are loving it. They're having a fun time. They're asking for more work, and that does happen, in a classroom where kids are bored, they're disengaged, they're not enjoying the lesson. And it has nothing to do with the activities, but everything to do with how it's presented. And so one of the biggest things that I see people fall into, one of the biggest traps, is saying, okay, I tried this game with my kid. Let me change the game. When sometimes it's a matter of, okay, let's change our body language closer to them. Let's establish a little physical contact so they feel us with them. Let's make eye contact. Let's change our voice. Oftentimes it's lowering it. We're bringing a lot of energy and a lot of anxiety in. Let's lower the voice. Let's talk to them. Let's be warm and demanding, because I can say, hit this sound, touch this sound, throw this sound, and you have no motivation to do it. I can get really close and say, okay, today we're going to look at this letter. What does this letter say? Yeah, that's right. And I can get a kid in literally from how I manage, how I think about myself and their behavior. And so I think the biggest mistake here is thinking it's the activity, when oftentimes it's specific that we can do as the teacher in this case to help our children focus. And sometimes it is the activity. Some of y'all are doing boring stuff with your kid and it's like, let's add a little more excitement here. Other times there's things that we can do with our body, our voice, our tone to help to engage our children, even with the same stuff.
Yeah. What I hear you describing is really connection. And what I'm hearing is, you know, this is what I talk about a lot when I'm talking about toddlers, behavior, developmentally appropriate, positive discipline. One of the big tenets of that is connection. And the more that we focus on creating connection with a child, or really any human being, whether it's a parenting partner or anyone else, a coworker, when we create connection, the relationship's generally going to go more smoothly and we're going to have more influence. Now, it doesn't mean things are going to go exactly how we want, or, you know, we can't control other people. You definitely can't control your child, and you can't make them learn how to read. And whenever you focus on connection, and you know what you're saying is using your body language, your tone, things like that, there's a lot of ways that we can just augment our interactions to create more connection, which creates more influence, and in the end it's going to create more fun for everyone, because you know, when you're connected with your child, they're just going to be more responsive and excited, because really, especially toddlers, like, they just want to please us inherently, and they want to feel connected. And so the more that we can facilitate that connection, the better it's going to be for behavior in general, no matter what's happening.
Yeah, I agree. And I might add to connection our like directions, how clear the directions are for the activity, and our expectations. Like, what do we expect them to be able to do? And I think if you pair that together, because you could have folks who are connected, but don't believe the kids can do it. Folks who believe the kid can do it, they're connected, but the actual directions for the activity are confusing, or it leaves too much ambiguity. We want to take the mental load off of our children to be able to focus. So we're connected, we're with them, we're present. They also know exactly what they need to do. And our expectations are, you can do this. And I think all those things together create the right environment for learning.
Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, I think it's important for us to also look at, you know, what's developmentally appropriate. If you're expecting an 18-month-old to sit for 20 minutes and work on an activity, it's probably not going to happen, because at 18 months, their attention span's so small. It's about 5 minutes. And so I think just also going into it with developmentally appropriate expectations, and also understanding that some toddlers move best through movement. And so sometimes toddlers, you think they're not paying attention or listening, but actually, and they're moving around, but they can still absorb what's going on and what's happening and move around. And sometimes that movement actually helps them recenter and refocus. And I think that, you know, you talked about at the beginning, respecting the child. And when we have developmentally appropriate expectations and we are following the child's lead, this is how we can make something as exciting as learning to read fun and supportive.
Completely agree. All of that.
So what are some other ways to maybe, you mentioned adding some excitement. Are there some other ways to like add some excitement or fun? And I know, like, you know, it might be different for an 18-month-old than like a 3-year-old, but I'd love to hear some of your ideas just for adding in that excitement level.
Of course, I think it's important to get to know your kid and what they like. And we can have the same activity that like feels fun to you or to me as an adult, but for one kid it's engaging and for one kid it's not. So when my son was learning how to read, he was 2, he liked trucks. Trucks were his thing. So I put trucks around us and the trucks would watch him learn. And it was both to make it fun. It's also to reinforce the behavior. So be very specific. Here's what the trucks want to see. And here's what and he'd watch it. And I have the trucks cheer for him. Good job. They name specific things that he's doing, right? Right now, that wouldn't fly. He loves trains. So I'd swap out the trucks. I do trains. And the trains might drive to the sound. We might have stations. That's the train station, the station. We park it at that station. But we're really working off of what our kids are interested in. So some kids, we have some older siblings who like to teach. I have parents who are helping the older child learn the sounds by teaching it to the younger sibling. We have some cases where the kid really likes dolls or likes play. So they're making up examples where the dolls sound. I've seen cases where there's a mom who has like a whiteboard and a marker. This was like, I'm like, this is more work than I'm going to do. But she's literally drawing whole stories on this whiteboard and marker. And she's like, we're at the beach and this is the S and it's going out to tan. And now you draw it in and it's this whole thing. But it's really knowing what your kid likes, what engages them, and any game, any activity that you can think of that your kid likes, I can think of a way, we together can think of a way to work seeing and saying the letter sounds into that activity.
That's so cool. I think this is really a great example of what it means to follow your child's lead. Sometimes I think that can get a little bit misconstrued. It means, you know, some people might think it means, oh, that means your child runs the show or your child's in charge or in control of everything. But really, following your child's lead is knowing them, knowing their interests, and looking at how can we adapt the things that we're asking of a child, the things that we're doing in life, to make it interesting for them as a unique individual. And that is really following the child's lead. And so I just love this example of the trucks and the trains, because that truly was you following your child's lead. I love that.
Right. And if I can add one more thought here on how to make it fun.
Yeah.
Again, I think a different perspective than maybe what most folks who are like toddler accounts we'll say, but there's something else that is like similar to fun, which I think is rewarding, that kids really like. Like there is a feeling that we as adults get when we accomplish something, when we do something, when we learn something. It feels deeply satisfying. And oftentimes it's things that come with some effort. Not saying that we had to cry to get there, we had to struggle forever, but some effort getting there. When I do a workout and I finish, I feel really accomplished because you know what? I didn't want to do it and it was hard. And then I got through it. And then eventually I do it where, you know what? I did want to do it. It was really fun. It was hard and I still did it. And our kids get that same thing. And I've seen both with my son and with the hundreds of videos parents send me, you see a kid and you see them working. You see them trying. You see them doing their best and you see them learning something that they didn't know before. 18 months, 2 years old, 2.5, 3, they can tell they accomplished something. They can tell that they did something on their own, that they worked for it. And that to me is a deeply, deeply rewarding experience. I think it flirts with fun, but when we pair it with the fun and the activities and the games, we say we're having fun doing this and we feel success, we feel rewarded, we feel like we accomplished something. I think that's a feeling and that's an experience that we deserve as parents and that our children deserve to have as well.
Yeah. I mean, this, what I hear you describing is like this sense of accomplishment. And it's really important for toddlers because the whole point of toddlerhood is for toddlers to realize that they are a separate individual from their parents and caregivers. So they're learning what it means to be me, to be an individual. And so they want to feel like they have a role in the family. They want to feel like they have a sense of power. And so when a child can feel like they're accomplishing something, when they're building new skills, because toddlers have very limited life experience, they're learning so many things about the world. So when a child learns a new skill and feels that sense of accomplishment, I think it's just such a big intrinsic motivator, and it can happen in so many areas of life. And I oftentimes say we tend to underestimate a toddler's physical abilities and overestimate their emotional regulation abilities, because sometimes we expect like a two-year-old to be able to control their emotions and not have a tantrum, when in reality they can't do that yet. But at the same time, sometimes we find ourselves doing things for toddlers that they actually have the capability of doing if we set the stage and help them learn the skill. And so reading is just another one of those skills that we can help a toddler learn how to do and create a sense of accomplishment. And I just love your approach to this, because we're not saying like, oh, and teach your toddler to read in 1 week or 2 weeks or 3 days or something. It's really about taking these small skills and breaking it down into like these stepping stones that then is going to lead to a toddler creating this skill and having this ability. I love it.
Yep.
So, gosh, our time's coming to a close, and some parents and caregivers might be thinking, okay, Spencer, we're going to get started. What's the first thing we do? Like, we're just going to get started tonight. What's one thing that parents and caregivers can do now just to get started on this path?
Yeah, I'm going to give two answers. I'm going to give like a self-plug answer and then like a real answer. Self-plug is I have a free workshop that's 30 minutes and walks through in more detail how to teach the sounds and how to teach blending. And it's not just something I send folks to because it's mine. It's something I send folks to because it's good. And it's something I spent months doing and redoing, and I have people take it and I say, okay, what's the feedback? So this is something that I know parents leave that 30 minutes feeling empowered and feel ready to go. There's also a live chat connected to it. So I very likely missed some messages during this recording, and I'll go back and I'll answer those. But I'm literally personally answering people's questions as they take and as they engage. So if you're watching this and you're like, okay, I want a little bit more detail, or you're like, I want to talk to Spencer directly and get input on my situation, because I think my situation is different, workshops got you covered. Other than that, though, the most important thing is just making the time and doing it. It's making the time and doing it. It is not waiting to get the perfect setup. It's not waiting to get the perfect routine, because everybody messes up with teaching. That's the thing. Everyone messes up. And the reason why some folks continue teaching, why some folks get better, why some folks get results with students, is because they messed up enough times and were reflective about it to say, here's how I get better. And if you follow me, my page, my business, I take a lot of heat for some of the things that I say to parents. What I tell parents is the same thing I tell teachers. It's the same thing I tell myself. It's the same thing that I tell, always get better. There's always things that we can do. There's always ways that we can improve. It's not a negative judgment. It's not something to be afraid of. It's not something to be sad about. It's just true. We can always do better. And I'm sure that you've looked at this conference and every year you've said, okay, how can I do a little bit better? I look at my social media and say, okay, how can I give a little bit more information? How can I make this easier to understand? I looked at my free training. How can I make this better? Let me add a live chat. Let me talk to folks while they take it. We look at parents and we say, you're not going to just sit down and study this for a week and then go in and have this amazing lesson. You have to do it. And then you have to look at it and you can say, how can I get better? And if you do this 4 times, 5 times a week for 5 minutes, you say, we've done 20 minutes this week. If after every one of those lessons, you step back and you say, how can I make it better? And you say, okay, I showed 4 sounds. It seemed confusing. Let me show 3 next time. Or I sat here and they sat there. We were side by side and we had to keep turning. Next time, let's work face to face. Or you say, you know what? I lost my temper. I got frustrated. Next time, I'm going to have a glass of wine next to me. Next time, I'm going to get some more sleep. Next time, I'm going to meditate. You do something to get better. And if parents start tonight, if they start today, and they find a little thing to improve every single time, I guarantee within a week, within 2 weeks, within 3 weeks, not only is the kid going to be learning how to read, but you're going to be learning how to teach and you're going to be learning how to coach them.
I love it. Well, gosh, there's so many more questions I want to ask you, and I know our time's coming to a close. So I know that you have something you want to offer our audience. Could you tell us a little bit more about that before we go?
For sure. So learning to read doesn't need to take a lot of time and doesn't need to have a lot of resources. One of the things that I sell are my sound cards, and they are thick, they're sturdy, they're really nice. They have really cute pictures on the back. And I have a printable version of these sound cards. So with the letters, full color, full size, really nice, that I include for free in my paid. And I wanted to offer that to anyone watching the conference as well, just to have a printable version of this. So there's literally, like, you're like, I'm ready to go now. You can download, you can print them out, cut them. The kids love them, and you can start teaching your kid today. So you don't have to worry, are the letters easy enough to read? Is it the right case? Is it this or is it that? Happy to provide that for the folks here. And I hope it's just one extra thing that makes it a little bit easier to get started.
That's so awesome. Now everyone can just click the button, download it, and get started. I love it.
Sure.
Is there anything else that you want to tell us, or any words of wisdom you want to leave us with today?
Yeah, I'll just say, you know, I think parenting is one of those fields where everyone has an opinion, and I'm not here to change it. I'm not here to convince someone to teach their kid how to read. I'm not here to say, let's like force kids to read, that even kids should read, because it's not toddlers must read. It's toddlers can read. My goal is just to support families, to support caregivers in doing what they think is best for their little one. So just transparently speaking to my audience, different speakers, we're all going to say different things, different accounts, we're all going to say different things. I try to support everything that I say, everything I believe, with facts, with research, with scientific evidence, and with experience. And I hope that I'm able to translate that to folks in a way that feels super encouraging, super motivating to get started. I don't try and bore people with the technological like language of like this, that, and the other thing, or with the research, but also we have it and are happy to share that with folks. If people are like, I want to get started, but I'm just wondering about this, or this person told me this, I'm happy to point people to the original research and to the original sources to help them understand. But ultimately, this decision, it's a you with your kid decision. It's what you think is best. And if you decide this isn't the right time, this isn't the right place, or you're not the right person, then like, please feel empowered to make that choice. That's not mine to make. And I've told people this before, unfollow me. Just don't look at my page, because it's going to make you anxious. If this isn't the right thing for you at this time, don't follow accounts because you think you need to, or because you think you should, or because you think as a parent, you've got to be doing, there's nothing that you need to do as a parent. So if you watch this full thing, you're like, I'm feeling anxious, I would encourage you just disengage for a little bit and back at a time when this feels more appropriate. But if people watch and they feel encouraged, which I hope that they do, and they feel motivated to get started, then I am going to be here 100% in your corner. And there's going to be no one going to outwork or outsupport or outprovide the resources that I try to provide for my families when they sign up.
And where can everyone go to learn more?
You can learn more at toddlersread.com. That's going to have links to things like free quizzes to take to see if your kid is ready. Also, that free workshop that I referenced. I also have social media channels at Toddlers Can Read, in order of how good they are: my YouTube, then my Instagram, then my TikTok, then my Twitter. So if you want the good stuff, I would start at the top. Once you start getting down to TikTok, you're like, okay, this isn't the best stuff, right? The best stuff is up here. So you can either check out my website or check out any of those handles.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Spencer, for being here today, for sharing your passion for supporting families, for supporting children. And I really appreciate the work that you're doing in the world. And thanks for taking the time to hang out with us.
Cool. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for the information that you share as well, and giving parents honest, truthful, easy to implement information on toddler behavior, which is certainly not easy, but it's much appreciated.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And to everyone watching, we'll see you again soon. Bye.